with your latest collective. It's October, and you might see a few children, maybe even adults, who wear masks at harvest festivals, and you might recognize others who wear masks every day. Maybe you might be one who finds wearing a mask as comfortable or, you know, just the way that you go about in the world. Think about the masks that people wear. One mask is smarter than you, the smarter than you mask. We know people like that. There's other masks that people wear, the got it all together mask. There's another one, the nothing mask, where somebody is detached. They just don't connect. They act like they're not involved. And one last one, I know you guys are thinking of many different masks, but one is the important mask, somebody who thinks they're better than you. It's not to say that you have to be wearing the I'm fine mask, but let's take off our masks and seek to be genuine and connected people and seek God and find those safe people that you can be vulnerable, where you don't have to wear a mask. Are you ready to take it off? We're going to open this segment of the collective with bookend teachings. Chris Williams is going to compare the character Pigpen from the Peanuts comic strip to his internal world. And Dr. Jackie Mac-Harris will share on perspectives and communications. Inside the bookends are two calls. First, Dr. Jackie and I come alongside of Bobby as she struggles with how to accept love after growing up in a broken home with no father. Then Mark Cameron and Dr. Alice Benton address Mary's concern about being forgiven for a sin from a while ago that she can't get over. Let's listen in.
Confession time with Chris Williams. So,
yes.
I love hearing all these good juicy tidbits from you.
Confession times with Chris. So the confession today is that, you know, the Peanuts comic strip, you know, and shows, you know, and it has Pigpen.
Yes. Yeah.
And you got the visual of Pigpen where you have the dust flying all over the place, you know,
it's
and he's like,
my child.
Yeah, right. So Pigpen is a representative of my internal world. It gets so messy so quickly, and it kind of can follow me around unless I clean it up. And so I want to share something about the messy internal world that I deal with, and I'm sure others can share in this same ailment and predicament, is that what helped me get into it and understand it much more is this definition of addiction. And again, this is going to take a little bit of a sidebar, but it'll come back to it. One of the primary psychological definitions of addiction that I've come to love is it is a radical commitment to escape reality. Again, commitment to escape reality. And so the reality that we're oftentimes escaping is our internal state, is the Pigpen inside of us, right? Therefore, recovery is a radical commitment to reality. The way I like to say this for myself and for the people that I work with is we need a radical commitment to is, to what is, not what should be, not what's supposed to be, but a radical commitment to what is the reality in front of us, and most importantly, the reality inside of us. And is has a double entendre, a double meaning. So one is just reality, but two, it's an acronym for internal state. I need a radical commitment to my internal state, because as the scripture shows us really clear, we see in Proverbs, you know, guard your heart for it's the wellspring of life. If I can give you the Chris Williams translation of that, it is protect and nurture your heart, because everything meaningful in life is going to come out of that place. And so being able to get into our heart, get into our internal world is so critically important. And here's just four things that I practice and I try to help other people practice as well. Is the first thing we need to do is maybe the hardest, and that is to slow down. If we slow down and take some time, kind of like that word meditation, but really just focus on what is going on inside of us, and we learn to accept it and not judge it. It's really important. The second we start putting all of our good and bad labels on it, the whole thing shuts down. So when we accept it for an is, and then we stay open and humble, it'll allow us to get clear on what's going on the inside and allow us to refocus, recenter, and oftentimes get some needs met, but really clean up the mess on the inside. That's what New Life has been doing for, you know, 40 some years, what we're going to continue to do. So if you need help with the internal state with your pig pen, let us help you today.
Here is Bobby listening in Delray Beach, Florida on Sirius XM channel 131.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. My question is, it's just a brief question. I'm not married, although I have a problem with intimacy. So my thing is, with this relationship I have with the father, I don't know how to accept love because I've come from a broken childhood, a broken family. I didn't have a father. I didn't grow up with a father. So I have no idea how to accept fatherly love. I've gone through a lot of things in my life, a lot of trauma, a lot of abuse, a lot of sexual abuse, trust issues as a child, neglect, a few things, you know, to say the least. I don't know how to accept that love or how to conceive the type of love I'm supposed to embrace. I never had the human, you know, the actual, you know, our human, my father, as an example. So I just, you know, to get the connection of that is kind of hard for me. So I don't know. Maybe you guys can kind of.
Well, Bobby, that makes sense. I want to just validate, though, that even if you had the human version of a father, you may still have this challenge because some of us grew up with a dad that wasn't safe or a dad that was safe but fallible, right? And so none of us get that godly agape, just all in love from any human. So as much as some of us have had great fathers and love them, they couldn't hold a candle to what it is that we get from God. And so I mentioned earlier about these three radicals: radical acceptance, radical transparency, and radical forgiveness. If you could start to maybe meditate on, sit with, think on those three things, because for me, that's what God's love represents. I am 100% accepted. God fully accepts you with all your flaws and faults and traumas and trauma responses and all the bad, all the good, all the ugly, all the beautiful. God fully accepts. That's the first thing, radical acceptance. And it's, I say radical because it's beyond anything we can understand. So you can stop trying to wrap your head around it because it's never going to make sense. No one loves like this. And then the second thing is radical transparency. God wants us to show up authentically, be who you are. Unfortunately, a lot of us get a lot of noise from a lot of other places about who we should be, but be who God's creating you to be. And that answer is inside of you. And then the last part is radical forgiveness. God is forgiven, the ultimate forgiveness. And I carry those three things inside of me and try to generously offer that to others in other relationships, because that's how I experience God's love through others in my life. And so I try to give those radicals, that's as close as I can come to sharing godly love. I'm going to radically accept you for who you are, that which is going to mean that I'm going to have to forgive because you're going to do some things I don't necessarily like. And that gives you room to be transparently who you are. And a good Christian counselor can help you walk through the steps of getting your life to a place where you can lean into being who you are and loving yourself, because God says to love him with our heart, soul, and mind, but also to love others as we love ourselves. And that is where I think you will begin to really experience the love of God, is in you beginning to experience loving yourself because you're created in his image.
Yeah. So, Bobby, I'm wondering, have you done any work on this at all? Like, have you been to a counselor group, anything like that?
No, currently I'm actually doing you guys' life recovery, I believe.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, so that was going to be what I suggest, because Bobby, you have a thought process in your head. What is it supposed to be? What is it? What's the level? What does that look like? You just know that you don't have it now, but it almost seems unattainable because there's a picture in your head of what it's supposed to be. And so I love that you're in a group. I think that's a great way to start to experience relationship. And then there's practices like what Jackie's talking about, but also getting the healing from the abuse, the trauma, the, you know, just the life experiences that you've had. It's amazing because we're not always aware. Just like you said, Jackie, if you had an in-person father, you might have to have some work on overcoming who he was. So the work that you have to do in healing is going to draw you closer to God the Father, because you'll understand yourself better along the journey. I'm just really glad that you're asking these questions. And I hope that something that we've said has encouraged you. I think How We Love would be a great book to send, Bobby, because it talks about the history, about how we attach with people. I just, and keep doing the group, because it'll make a difference.
Hi there, Mary. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Thank you. This is hard for me to talk about. I'm struggling with, I'm a Christian woman, and I'm struggling with how I can be forgiven for my sins.
Okay.
You know, within, I haven't done this sin in the past 4 to 5 years, but prior to that, maybe for off and on for almost 10 years, I've had a couple inappropriate relationships with someone of opposite sex. I've never slept with them, but it was inappropriate.
Okay.
And I was a Christian. So how does a Christian do these things and then repent and completely turn around, love the Lord? How can I know that I'm really forgiven?
Alice?
Mary, are you married?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And were you married during some of these relationships you had?
Oh, yes. I've been married for 39 years.
I also had an emotional, leaning towards an affair, emotional affair, an emotionally inappropriate marriage while I was married.
Okay.
So you and I have committed a similar sin.
Right.
And I also felt ashamed. Couldn't believe I did it.
I tested with myself. Uh-huh. I'm shameful. I've been shouldering this for years. Mm. And I wake up with anxiety at night sometimes. Mm. And last night was the worst. I spiraled downward. And I just feel like I
Does your husband know what happened?
He does. He does. He doesn't know nitty gritty details, but he does. Yes. And he always tells me I'm forgiven. God forgives. But I can't accept it for myself for some reason. Mm-hmm.
You don't understand why you did it either. Why you were vulnerable to do those things.
I don't know. Other than I've been married. I've known my husband since I was 15 years old. I homeschooled my children. I went back to work, and then men give you attention, unfortunately, and it appealed to my sin nature.
But it's been 5 years now, Mary, I think you said. So you've been able to, you know, you're holding yourself accountable.
I have absolute zero desire. I just can't get past the fact that I did this, and How am I forgiven for that? Because I can understand someone who's not a Christian being forgiven, coming to the Lord. I'm sorry. I don't know how a Christian woman can do this.
Let me ask you this, forgiven. Mary. How were mistakes handled in your home growing up, and was there forgiveness?
That's a good question. A lot of just, you know, I'm the baby of 5 kids, so it was a long time ago. A lot of just blaming. I don't know. Your fault. Someone else's fault. I didn't have a bad childhood, I don't think. But guilt. Okay, guilt. Yes. My mom always was, she always felt the guilt. So yes, a lot of guilt. Yes.
And did she possibly even use that phrase, how could you do this? You should have known better.
No, I don't believe so. Honestly, I don't believe she said that to me. I say it to myself.
Well, you do. And the reason why I ask that is because a parent's voice often becomes our own internal voice. So whether she maybe, a lot of times it's the actual words that they use, but maybe that was the messaging that you got. She used a lot of blame. She used a lot of guilt. And so, you know, these are foundational lessons. for individuals. Mm-hmm. And so we grow up, and these are the lessons that we learn about relationships, what we learn about mistakes, what we learn about repair, what we learn about forgiveness and grace. And so, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you have, you know, you say, I have understanding for a non-Christian to do something and be forgiven. But as believers, as Christians, you know, we invite God into our heart, but we also need to continually repent because, you know, sin is a problem in our lives. The hope is that as we are transforming, we're moving toward Christ, and that process is called sanctification, but we still will sin. We still will mess up. It's about being able to acknowledge, take accountability, and then make a plan to move forward. And I hear that in you. I hear knowledge and I hear accountability and a plan to move forward. But what I'm hearing for you is this, there's a separation from logic and guilt here too, the where there's shame that is overwhelming you. And and I believe it's most likely these messages from childhood, this blame and this guilt. And now you lock yourself in a prison when there's really an open door to it.
Mm. Alice.
Mary, I think you protest grace. Your husband says easily you're forgiven, but I think a part of you shuts that out, and that's usually shame. I don't deserve to be forgiven, so I can't hear that. No, that's not true. I'm at fault. I should not. How could a Christian woman do this?
Yeah.
The way you get past the shame is telling the story and figuring out what did lead me to that point. Why was attention so attractive? I can already guess just from a couple of the things you said, Mary. And I really want you to try to let your guard down and let my voice in. You were a homeschooling mom, girl. That's a 24/7, never-ending job. Yeah. I bet you were exhausted. It's a pretty thankless job. And you might even start to feel like kind of lost touch with that old me that got to go out and have fun and feel attractive and young and got attention from my husband. Because you're in the doldrums of I'm just raising kids, changing diapers, grading papers. Oh,
mm-hmm.
So even just that portion, I would say, gosh, it makes sense that getting attention from other men really hit a dry spot in your heart and soul where you were needing attention. Of course, you and I, we went for inappropriate attention. So but by telling our story and having some empathy for that exhausted homeschooling mom up to her eyeballs in papers, grading papers, getting empathy for her, and then even empathy for that child that grew up in a home that blamed all over the place. When you said first, there was a lot of blame, a lot of fault. It wasn't that bad. I bet it actually was kind of rough at times. You laugh because I think you know. But you're kind of good.
Yeah, go ahead. More so for my older brothers and sisters, but I was the baby. I was the special one, you know. So
you were protected from some of it, perhaps.
Yes, I was. I was protected from so much. I went to private school my whole life. I was the only one who got to. I was sheltered so much.
So when you point out the good, I hear an underlying message. So you should just be grateful because look at all the good things you had in your life growing up. And those are true.
I'm grateful.
Yeah.
Yes.
But if the message is you should only be grateful and it's kind of not allowed to talk about, well, actually, there were some real hard times. Guilt is pretty heavy to carry around. Gosh, that wasn't easy. And I didn't maybe feel forgiven and loved when I made mistakes as a child. Maybe I felt like I was stupid. Why did I do that? Come on. Even though they might not have said that, it does sound like that's what you internalized. So here's my hope for you. I hope you get into individual counseling and one of our New Life Recovery groups. Mm-hmm. Because when you're sitting across the circle from someone like me who says, you know what, Mary, I did too. And we can
so awesome to be able to talk to someone like you because I you know, this isn't something I want to share with people.
Of course not, because we're both embarrassed by it.
I have grandchildren, you know, so I'm so sick of myself.
So when you said it feels good to talk to someone like you, exactly. That's why a group experience works, because it's a bunch of us sinners sitting around together talking about those sins, letting our guard down and receiving grace and forgiveness from each other. That's God's recipe for getting shame out and getting grace in.
Yeah, and it's helpful to understand the definition of grace. Grace is getting something you don't deserve. And so, you know, you're acknowledging I don't deserve it. But that's the beauty of grace. And one thing I think that I would challenge you with too, because as you go to these groups and you may have someone who has the same sin that they've committed and they're bringing the same thing here. Now, if my friends Alice and Brian wanted to borrow some money from me, I would lend it to them. But if they wanted to borrow more money than is in my bank account, I couldn't lend it to them. So my point is you can't give what you don't have. If you're not able to have grace for yourself, you're not going to be able to offer that to others either.
Jackie, what's on your mind to start us off?
Perspective taking and communication. I noticed that a lot of times relationships are struggling because there's a lot of conflict in the communication, so they don't communicate effectively. And there's conflict in the communication because each person wants their words to be the center of the conversation. We have to be able to take another person's perspective in order to move forward and to deepen our relationships. When I have something to share with my husband, I'm sharing from what I think, what's happening in my mind, what happened in my body when that event happened, what I desire, what I dream about. That's what I'm talking about. When I say it to the other person, they're hearing it through what they desire, where they've been, what happened on their side, how their mind works. And so it sounds different. It sounds wrong. It sounds like a lie to them because it's not their truth. And so we have to actually practice perspective taking. We have to practice regulating ourselves, our emotions, centering ourselves, grounding ourselves while another person is sharing something that's hard for us to hear. And if we can do that, we can deepen our emotional intimacy, we can grow in our empathy and get to understand and know our person. I hear so many people that are in families that they feel unknown and unseen. I know people who don't really know their parents. They couldn't say that they know who they are and what they think and what they want out of life because we don't listen to each other. As soon as someone starts to tell you something that you don't already think, you tell them that's wrong. No, that never happened. That's not what happened.
Yeah.
And so I'm just encouraging the listeners, if you want to have more effective communication, consider what I heard Dr. Jim Burns say one day. Do you want to be right or do you want to be in this relationship? And most often people want to be right and they think that the other person should concede for them so that they can feel good. And I'm just asking, take others' perspectives because the vantage point and the frame of reference really does matter in the story. If you think about the Gospels and the Bible, it's four different versions of the same story. And because we have everybody's perspectives and everybody's viewpoints, we have a deeper, richer understanding of that experience.
Yes.
And so we need the different perspectives. I do, when I do workshops, I have a volunteer couple stand up in the middle of the room and describe the room without turning their head, look past that person, describe the room. And they describe it differently because they have different vantage points. Mm-hmm. Neither are wrong, neither are lying, but they are looking at it from a different angle. And if we can just hold that in our bodies while we are taking another person's perspective, we can improve our communication and our relationships.
Jim?
That's a great word. When I was early in our marriage, I used to say in my humble opinion, and then I would say, and Kathy says, in your humble opinion, you always think you're right. And I had to change my humble opinion and my way.
Yes.
So how do you do it, though, when let's say somebody's talking to you? Wow, we're running out of time here. Somebody's talking to you, you're listening to them, and you may not interrupt them, but in your mind, you're already interrupting them, and you're not even listening to everything else they're saying, because in your mind, you're already having your own conversation.
Yeah, that's where mirroring comes in. If I have to remember what you said to say it back to you, then I can't be preparing my defense.
Nice. I like that.
Next, we're going to hear from Dr. Jim Burns and Mark Cameron as they walk through Kevin's concern about being a rescuer and what boundaries he should add to his life. Then Chris Williams and Dr. Jill Hubbard address Danny's concern about his wife's abuse as a child and how he can encourage her to seek help. Two more teaching segments will follow. Chris Williams is going to share about a term, benevolent witness. Have your notebooks ready with your pen, because there's notes to be taken. And then Mark will talk about what he learned about attachment while on a recent vacation.
Welcome to New Life Live, Kevin.
Thank you. I was just driving into a prison ministry and kind of praying about the day, and some of the things that are going on, and Lord said seek wise counsel. So I was listening to you guys, and I figured I'd dial in. The situation is recently, I'd say over the last couple of months, God has hooked me up with guys who are struggling with fentanyl addictions. I know I can have a tendency to be the rescuer, and I was just wondering, what are some good boundaries to set with them? Kind of like that hard fentanyl addiction. It just seems like when they're hooked, they're severely hooked.
Mm. Kevin, is it just the people at the prison that you're saying you're rescuing, or is it people that you meet on the street?
Actually, this is a couple of guys that have showed up at our church's Bible study. Oh,
find who's helping in your area. How great that they're at church. That means they're taking that first step. Sometimes with fentanyl addiction, you know, they can go, they need more than just a meeting every once in a while. They need, you know, some intense care. So your job, and I say this to every volunteer and every pastor that I work with, I say, find the resources in your community and then, you know, bring these people to that resource. And you may have to get them in a car and bring them. But in a moment when they have that need, that's when you take them. Just sent a guy to a Salvation Army in Fresno, California, and he stayed, but he didn't want to go. But he stayed and, you know, he's going through the process. Yay. I don't know what will happen at the end, but, you know, that's what you want with these guys that you're working with. How great that they're coming to you.
Yeah. Mark, any thoughts?
Yeah, I have some thoughts for you, Kevin. If you came to see me in my office before I answered your question about boundaries, I'd want to find out more about why you are a rescuer.
I'm basically the second generation stepping out of the generational sin of alcoholism. You know, since I've become a Christian, it was about 35 years ago, and God's had me in the pursuit of, how should I really be running my life? And one of those areas was, he had kind of pointed out that I have a tendency to rescue people because it was a pretty turbulent time in my family at times, not really physically abusive, probably mostly just verbal, and distancing and the odd ways of lack of communication. You know, with the elephant in the living room kind of thing. So I think I was always trying to be the peacemaker amidst the conflict. And that's something I've had an opportunity with me and my wife to be facilitating 12-step program, Celebrate Recovery. And so God kind of clued me in, you know, that I need to be careful about that. So that's why I was kind of calling. And I figured, well, victory, there's victory in wise counsel. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. I'll take whatever input you guys have got.
Yeah. So in childhood, you were trained to help. You were trained to serve. And I find that with people who are rescuers, usually they have to take care of a family member or they have to take care of a parent, and they get trained that way. And what happens when a child goes through a circumstance like that is they feel a lot of anxiety inside when they see their parent stressed or the family member stressed. And so they learn to fall into this role of rescuing and helping to calm the situation down. But really, it's also mainly to calm their own anxiety down. And so now you've gone into adulthood. And, you know, we need people who help others. And so you're a great blessing. But I would imagine there's probably a lot of anxiety inside of you still when you see people struggling and you rescue and you help because it's a way to reduce your anxiety. Is that true?
Yeah, I could see that. I try to be cognizant when, those kind of situations come up.
So here's what my advice to you would be, Kevin. I love that you're a helper and you want to help other people, but we don't want to do that to your detriment or to other people's detriment. So I encourage you to get into counseling and have a therapist help walk you through your childhood story. Have that person help you understand, you know, the anxiety that you feel around seeing other people in distress. Because as you learn to deal with that and as you learn to become more confident, that's where you'll build your boundaries. Because part of helping other people who are going through hard things like this is knowing when to allow them to experience the consequence of their actions. Because when you don't do that, you often rob them of that growth opportunity. But you need to be able to work on that piece on the inside of yourself. So I love what you're doing, but I think that would greatly benefit you if you could make sense of your childhood story that way.
Now we're going to talk to Danny, who is in Los Angeles, listening on KKLA. Hi, Danny. Welcome to New Life Live.
Hi. Good morning. Here's my question to you guys. I am a Christian, me and my wife. and African-American. We live here in Los Angeles, California. My wife is of a mixed race. Her father is white and her mom was black. Here's my problem. Her father molested her for many years when she was young. Mm. And in my marriage, it has shown itself greatly. Mm. I've been trying to deal with this because I love my wife, and I reached out to a worldly counselor, and that didn't go well at all.
How long have you two been married, Danny?
9 years.
Okay.
And the problem with this is that my wife don't believe she needs help. Mm-hmm. She suppresses it and tries not to think about it. And so I've been seeing the effects
it
had on my wife and on our marriage and her behavior.
You know that's not working so well. Her suppressing it.
Exactly.
So I'm curious, what did her worldly counselor suggest? That
we get divorced.
Really?
Whoa.
Okay. That, wow. Yeah,
exactly. For getting her. And so here's where I'm seeing a lot of the problems here with her. She don't want me to give myself to anyone but her. She thinks all my energy, money, love should be directed towards her. And when it's not, she acts out. Hmm. I'm ministering over a men's discipleship Bible study group. And here's the example. And it's on a Thursday. And every time I'm preparing and it gets like to a Tuesday or Wednesday, she acts out. Hmm.
And when she acts out, what does that look like?
I mean, like it's something that she might even create. I'll give you another example here. If I give my time to my son, that's not our son together. Mm-hmm. It's my youngest child who hasn't had a job. And so I was helped take care of him until he got a job. He just got a job here over the last month. So that's been a blessing. But every time I would try to help him financially in any other kind of way, she would act out. I mean, like, it's always negative.
Act out like she...
What does acting out look like?
Well, she would tell me I shouldn't be helping him. She would tell me...
She would get angry at you or yell at you?
She would get very angry with me. It's like she would find something, even if I'm getting ready to teach a men's group, she would find something. And I would tell her that, do you notice that every time I'm getting ready to teach a group, you act out, you find something. And I had even said to her, you don't like peace in your home? And I know that may not have been the right thing to say, but I just was trying to bring up to her and make her acknowledge.
Well, she has a scarcity mentality. There's not enough to go around. And if you share with others, it's like they're taking from her. What she needs, because there's not enough reassurance in the world to make her feel okay and to keep suppressed all that she has been suppressing. So she's using the current adoration and attention to kind of stuff all that stuff down. Because how horrible to be molested by your father. Yeah. I can't think of something that would make you feel more devalued.
Well, there is a hole at the bottom of her bucket.
Yeah.
So the more you put in, the more it leaks out. Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing anyone can do about that except for her. I believe that your wife is dealing with a tremendous amount of internalized shame as a result of her abuse.
I agree.
And so she feels constantly that she is the problem. Now, if you say you need to go to counseling, it lights that part of her on fire. So the strategy would be for you, Danny, to be like, no, I need help. I'm not doing this marriage very well. Now, it doesn't mean you're a bad husband. Doesn't mean that any of that. It just means that like, hey, I'm going to go get help and figure this thing out. Would you come along with me?
Would you tell the counselor and help them to understand what I'm doing wrong here in this marriage?
Yeah.
So is this couples counseling or?
Well,
It is.
Could be. I mean, you could start with individual and then invite her in.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I don't know if she'd be willing to go to our marriage intensive, but intimacy in marriage would be a great place for her to start exploring it. Because actually, one of the things that we do, and especially through the book How We Love, but in our intimacy in marriage, is we talk about the impact of our childhood mm-hmm. on our current relationships. You know,
we are
history beings, you know. And so one of the things that I steal from Milan Yurkovich all the time is that we must learn to get PhDs in each other's childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You know, I think of it this way. You know, when I married my wife, I thought I was getting the current chapter. Right?
Oh, wow.
So what, she was 25 when we married?
There was
24 previous or 25 previous chapters that I needed to end up learning and reading.
Yeah.
So I knew the iteration that I was getting and vice versa.
Okay. And here's another thing. So Danny, when someone is like this, there's a tendency to want to create some distance emotionally mm-hmm. so that you have some space. But here's the thing. It sounds like one of her issues is with distance and closeness. Mm-hmm. So as long and she's going to want to be much closer than maybe you're comfortable with. So uh-huh. when she hears you're moving away from her by, I'm going to the men's group, I'm helping here, right? She's like, oh, that gap is getting bigger. And her anxiety's going up and she's feeling afraid. And because it's like she needs you super close. So use language that talks about closeness and distance.
That's really
good. I notice that when I, you know, you feel more distant from me, you feel disconnected. How can we stay connected even when I'm working on the guy's Bible study? And let her provide some of the ideas for that. And so all behavior has meaning. So you got to get down to the meaning of it. What is your acting out trying to tell me? And she may tell you all the surface stuff. No, let's go a little deeper than that. I think you get afraid. I think you get afraid that I'm not going to, you know, want to be with you or be faithful to you or whatever it is. You've got to find out. But using that kind of language, and then with the marriage weekend, right, you want to learn to be closer to her. And really, you're going to learn appropriate closeness, Danny. But, you know, okay. I want to learn. Would you come with me on this marriage retreat so we can really bond and learn about each other and mm-hmm. make our relationship the number one thing? See, all of that are ways. It's a positive spin yeah. on getting help.
Chris, how'd you like to start off today's program?
Okay, so again, as I tend to do,
confession time. We should just change the name
laughing,
of the program.
Chris, I'm already laughing.
Welcome to Confession Time with Chris. Okay, so my confession here today is there are times I am a terrible helper. Mm. I'm not very good at helping people, right? Mm-hmm. So despite me being a therapist and that being my profession, and hopefully there's times I'm good at it, but here is the way in which I can be a terrible helper. And I'm hoping this helps the rest of us. And that is...
To be terrible helpers?
No, to be better helpers. Thank you, Jill. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Helping to be better helpers. Because there are so many times where someone is telling me about their struggles or presenting me with a problem or just expressing their pain. And it's that last one that we can get real tripped up on, the expressing of pain. Because so much when other people are expressing their struggles and their pain, what we want to do is relieve the pain. Mm-hmm. And our typical response, I'll say my typical response to that is to feel this tremendous pressure to give them just the right words.
Yes.
And to have the right thing to say. This is very common, especially when people are in deep grief. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, the best thing that you can do is say nothing. Mm. And it is so hard to do. Because the struggle with saying nothing is we have to then join the other person in their own pain and powerlessness in the situation. Mm-hmm. But what we don't realize, or what I don't realize, is that the presence is way more powerful than the words. Mm. And so I just want to confess that, because most of the time in life, I think that we get overwhelmed with being there for people who struggle, being there for our friends who are suffering, our neighbors, whoever it may be, because we won't know what to do. Well, here's the good news. You don't have to do anything except for show up and be a loving presence. Mm-hmm. And
so it's developing that capacity to tolerate and bear with them what they are going through,
yes,
and what they are feeling. And that feels so uncomfortable for so many of us. And especially, we as helpers, we want to jump in, right?
Yes. Well, I hear you. We see that in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, where it says love bears all things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another term for that, where love is patient, right? And also, and my definition for that is it's empathy over time.
Mm-hmm.
That's patience. Bearing all things, long suffering, in the fancy word that we tend to use in, you know, therapeutic circles, is holding space. But holding space just means that I'm going to be a loving presence to make sure that you're not alone, mm-hmm, and to make sure that in your suffering, you have someone with you. And the fancy word that I heard a long time ago that has always stuck with me, because I just kind of like the way it sounds, but I really love the way of what it means, is that my job is to be a benevolent witness to other people. There's another side of that. I, in my own life, in the confessions, in my struggles, in my sins, and in my hurts, also need other people to be a benevolent witness. And that's truly how we can love sincerely, bear all things, and in that way reflect God much more when people bring us their struggles and their pains.
But doesn't that also give off the feeling to the other person? Let's say you're confessing something to me, or you're sharing your grief with me, and I don't say anything. I think I'm thinking, well, Chris isn't going to think I care if I don't say anything.
Well, it can be short things like, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Today, I want to talk about how we handle fear. So this summer, while traveling in Rome, we got the unforgettable experience of touring the Colosseum. Mm. Now, it was a guided tour, and in our group was a sweet Australian family of five, and about halfway through, their oldest son, he was about 12 or 13, he got lost from the group.
Ooh.
And the mom began to panic. Oh. And so my wife, Amy, she quickly stepped in and she said, hey, we'll watch your other two kids while you and your husband search for him. We'll stay with the group so, you know, they'll be safe. So thankfully, within a few minutes, he reappeared. But instead of relief, he snapped at his mom in that teenager tone and said, why did you leave me? And she fired back with this mix of relief, I'm sure, and frustration. Mm-hmm. You went ahead of us. I know you were scared, but you don't have to be a jerk about it. Sorry, Australians. That was my best effort here. But I see what people say about my accent, right? The rebuke sounds a lot cuter when it's in that Australian tone. Now, even though they were both clearly relieved, there wasn't any hugs upon reunion. And that reminded me of a well-known study in attachment called the Strange Situation Experiment, where researchers observed children's behaviors when they're separated from and reunited with a parent. Now, children developing a vacillator attachment style, which is also known as an anxious ambivalence style, they protest upon reunion with the parent. They do this push-pull. They want comfort, but they're unable to receive it, and they push back away, and they want the parent to know, I'm upset at being left by you. Now, this scene at the Colosseum, that was a perfect example. The son was scared, but he expressed it as anger. He was unable to receive that comfort, or he wasn't expecting it from the mom. And the mom was scared, and she responded with frustration. Now, I like to say we either talk out our emotions or we act them out, or we verbalize or we dramatize. Now, to ease the tension, my wife shared a similar story about a time my son lost the head to his Spider-Man figure when we were outside Buckingham Palace in a crowd. And as they bent down to look for it, you know, we couldn't see them and they got disconnected from my daughter and I. And when we reunited, there was no slow motion hugs or, you know, joyful music playing in the background. Sadly, it was frustration from us too. But what was under that? It was fear. Now, I've done some growth since then, and if I could go back to that moment, I'd like to think I'd say something more like, I'm sorry we got lost from one another. I know you were scared. I was worried too. I'm just really glad we're back together again. And then, can I have a hug? Can I give you a hug? Now, each of the attachment styles, they have their own way of dealing with fear. Avoiders, typically, they shut it down. They say things like, suck it up, or be brave, it's going to be fine. Pleasers, are often, they're so fearful themselves that they jump in and they rescue others instead of allowing people space to grow. And then vacillators, as I mentioned, they fear rejection and abandonment, and they can often mask their vulnerability with anger. So the next time fear shows up for you, whether through avoidance, rescuing, or anger, pause and ask yourself, what's a softer, more productive response? Learn to hold space for yourself, be gentle with others, and stay curious to understand the fear under the anger, because at its most secure point, love acknowledges, accepts, and comforts fear.
Yeah. Alice, any thoughts?
The verbalize or dramatize, if we don't talk about our feelings, they're going to leak out, and usually in an ugly, unproductive way. Is that what it means?
Exactly. And others have to guess right. from our behaviors.
Have you recognized a few masks that you or someone you know may be wearing by listening to these calls and talks? One benefit of listening is learning. And it's not to judge, but to create an understanding and an awareness that there is always something behind the mask. Chris Williams and Dr. Sherry Denham Keffer come alongside of Rachel, who's concerned about her husband's porn use and other challenges. Following is a call from Kim with how Every Man's Battle was instrumental for him and his son. We love hearing the testimonies that we receive. Then we will have Dr. Jill Hubbard read one more testimony before Dr. Sherry Denham Keffer shares a short teaching on the internal-external shame.
Rachel in Reading, Pennsylvania, listening on WBYN. Rachel, talk to us today. What's going on?
Hi. I'm so glad I got to be on the show today. I know Sherry's there, and Sherry, I'm so looking forward to your advice right now. Of course, all of yours, but I had called back in July and for the first time opened up about my husband looking at porn. I found some intense porn that he had been looking at October and November of last year. And after the second time, I told him, I gave him the boundary, you know, that this cannot keep happening. It absolutely must stop or this all goes away. We're married 36 years and I've been forever dealing with him looking at other women, wandering eyes, you know, young girls, and I'm only getting older. We're married 36 years, you know. So I went and spent the whole year keeping track of his search histories, and, you know, he finally stopped at the end of January of this year, that I haven't been able to detect anything. And I'm looking in numerous places, checking his phone, checking our home computer, checking his Google history, everywhere. And I'm like, wow, he's really being very good. And he's always the type to sweep it under the rug and absolutely just ignores it like it never happened. That's how we always solve our problems.
Rachel, I'm going to insert a question here. Has he stopped by white knuckling and strength of the will, or is he also in a recovery process to help him stop?
He is not in a recovery. Like I said, we cannot talk about anything. So he just says he's going to stop, which he did in October, and I found he was still looking again in November, and that's when I put my foot down.
Rachel, what's your call today? Because I know something happened.
Yeah. So okay. I went to Restore, and I got a ton of information there, and I started feeling better because I'm like, man, you know, his personality's changing for the first time. He's being softer spoken. He doesn't get frustrated as easily. Yesterday, I happened to just look at his phone, and I found that he's locked his deleted photos, and he's hiding photos, and you cannot get in there. He's locked them. I didn't even know you could do that. And now I know he's looking.
Yes.
He's got stash there. So now I'm to the point where I know I have to say something to him. I'm Catholic. I'm a devout Catholic, have been my whole life. He does not practice the faith. He does believe in God. I know he prays, but that's the extent of it.
What's the question for us today that we can help you with?
Well, I'm scared to death to bring it up to him, and I'm afraid of what might happen. And I guess I just need the push or some advice on what I need to say to him to get him to go to Everyman's Battle.
Yeah. Let me start here, because this is for all the guys out there. If you think that brushing a big problem under the rug solves the problem, it only creates a tripping zone for everyone else, including yourself.
Yeah.
And so I know it's scary, I know it's hard, but if you are struggling in this, get to Everyman's Battle. And I really mean it, because this only creates pain. And Rachel, jumping in here right away, I just want to say, as a guy who has struggled in this particular area, and who helps others, any problem that remains unaddressed is a problem that grows. So I would even, let's say I give him the benefit of the doubt, which would have to be an enormous benefit of the doubt, that he has not acted out in porn over the last year. He's a ticking time bomb.
Right.
Right. And so this is affirming what's happening inside of you. And I want to hand you off to Sherry to affirm where she started, is that your instinct and your intuition are screaming right now. And we really need to listen to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have a copy of my book, Intimate Deception?
I do. Okay. I bought it right away.
Good.
I got off the phone the first time with you guys, and it taught me a lot, and I just finished a day ago, Wired for Intimacy.
So now I want you to go back to one of my chapters. It's on boundaries. It's no is a complete sentence. No is a complete sentence. I want you to go back and read that whole chapter on boundaries.
Okay.
Because when you go to him and talk to him, there's a boundary structure that can sound something like this, Rachel. I'm entering into this conversation with you because I care about our relationship and I want it to be safe. Mm-hmm. I want it to be, I want it to be healthier. I just got back from Restore.
Well, he doesn't even know that I went to that. He knows I went somewhere.
But he didn't know. All right, so that's okay. You don't need to let him know that right now for the sake of conversation. Okay. Number one is I'm having a conversation with you because I care about a relationship and I want to be safe. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. The second thing is right now I'm not feeling safe. I'm picking up on the fact that you might be looking at pornography or doing something else. I don't know. I just am picking up on it and I need to feel safe. That's what I'm looking for. That's the second thing. Yeah. You just tell him what the problem is and that you need safety. The third thing is I need you to go to Everyman's Battle. Yeah. That will provide safety for me. And number four is, now if you choose not to go to Everyman's Battle, because I can't make you go, if you choose not to go, that can be your choice. But if you don't, blank. That's the impact statement. And that's what you have to be willing to lay down. That's the boundary. What are you willing to do? Then I'm going to ask for you to be in a separate bedroom. Or I'm going to ask you to... whatever it is, I don't know how I can continue to be in this relationship. That's a soft boundary. But you've been saying that for a while. It has to be something that has impact on him. And I don't know what that is. And it's longer than what we can talk about on the show right now.
Right.
But there needs to be some impact. And that's where the boundaries come in. And a consequence or an impact statement. Something that's going to disrupt his world if he doesn't go. Because you are serious.
Yeah. And Rachel, I just encourage you to stay very, very connected to your recovery. Mm-hmm. Stay in Sherry's book. Stay in your community from Restore. Because what you're needing right now, what Sherry's leading to, is clarity. What's the clarity that I need to restore? Because one of the things I hear in your voice, even the fact that you went to Restore and your husband doesn't know, is a clear indication to me that your marriage is beyond crisis right now.
All right, let's talk to Kim, calling in from College Station, Texas, listening on Sirius XM Channel 131. Hi there, Kim. Welcome to New Life Live.
Hey, guys. How are y'all today?
Doing great. Thanks for calling in.
My heart is just full right now, and I want to call in. My son and I attended Every Man's Battles this past weekend, and it was, I don't know that I have all the words. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was redemptive for our lives. But I had a struggle with pornography some years ago, and about 3 or 4 months ago, and I had been doing really well in my sobriety mm-hmm. with that. But my son called, and he was crying, and he said, Dad, I can't break this chain of pornography.
How old's your son, Kim?
He's 36 years old.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he said, I can't break this. And he was crying, and he said, I need help. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I realized, and I shared this at Every Man's Battle, was there was a generational issue that was occurring. It mm-hmm. occurred in the generation prior to me, on my mother's side mainly, and there was issues with my parents, and I had been affected early on in my life. And I know all of my brother and a lot of my nephews and have been affected with this. And then hearing my son crying out mm-hmm. for help.
So you and he went to the Every Man's Battle, and how is it now?
It's amazing. When we first started, he just ran up and hugged my neck, and he said, thanks, Dad. Mm. When we were just beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was able to cement a lot of the things that I had known, mm-hmm. but it was really good for me to go through it again.
Yeah.
And really secure my anchor in the tools that I had to, when this temptation comes, what do you do?
Yeah.
And I was just amazed, and he called me yesterday, saying, Dad, it's working. It is working.
Oh. Don't you love hearing stories like this, JJ?
Oh, my gosh, it just thrills my heart. And Kim, thank you so much for calling in to let us know that, because it's encouraging for us who are trying to do the work of helping others. But I think it's such an encouragement for those who are out there. There's lots and lots of dads out there right now who know that their own struggle has been an impediment to them being able to help rightly guide their sons into integrity and freedom. And so the idea of being willing, having the humility when your son called, to say, let's go do this together.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so grateful for that. I think, I love your spirit, Kim. I so enjoyed having you at the workshop, so enjoyed having your son at the workshop. But if anything, I hope that there are guys out there listening right now who, whether they're in the role of the son or the father, who are saying, you know what, we could go and do this together, and we could take a stand and break a generational curse.
Yes.
In our family.
Wow. Yeah,
and start something brand new. And as the scripture says, right? So yes, there are curses that flow to the third and fourth generation, but the blessings flow to 1,000 generations. And so mm-hmm. we could go from a family that's really struggled with this over the generations to a family that has victory with this for generations to come.
Kim,
how cool would that be?
Yeah. God bless you and your son. Thank you for calling in today and sharing your story, man.
Hi, this is Dr. Jill Hubbard, and I'm reading a testimony from Amy, who attended Restore. This workshop has truly been a gift for me. I was hesitant, anxious, and unsure if I really needed it at first. But I quickly realized it was exactly what I needed. I arrived feeling small, alone, stuck, and hopeless. However, I'm leaving feeling more understood, loved, and empowered. I am deeply grateful for the encouragement I received, the specific personal feedback, the knowledge and tools I was taught, and the laughter and connections I experienced within this community of women. What a beautiful ministry. Thank you for providing the hope I needed at just the right moment. I leave feeling lighter, with more joy in my heart, and a strengthened faith.
You know, I was driving here and thinking about some conversations I've had, mm-hmm. and also some of the things that I've read through social media, mm-hmm. on the internet, in different places where people talk online. And I've been reading things that betrayed partners say to one another. Mm. And what I noticed is there's a ton of shame, shame that we, internal shame, yeah. like I'm not good enough, I'm not safe, I can't trust anyone, I can't trust him, I'm stupid, how did I not see this? That's all internal shame. Mm-hmm. But there's also external shame. Mm. That gets put on us by other people.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
External shame yeah. sounds like, why are you still with him? Uh-huh. What's wrong with you?
Wow, yeah.
Or even if something's going well, betrayed partners can get triggered and they can say things like, well, at least you got your Prince Charming. I didn't. Or at least there wasn't a sexual affair. He just had an emotional affair. And yeah. I was trying to figure out, what is this? I know, understand the shame that is internal, but where does that external shame come from? Why do we say those mm-hmm. things to each other? And you know what I think it is? Grief.
Mm.
It's grief.
Yeah, that's really good, Sherry.
It's grief. It's that unprocessed pain that gets displaced on somebody else.
Yeah.
And when we're in grief, when we're not aware that I'm saying something in a comparison sort of way, that why I'm doing that is grieving. When I'm in that place, I can't have empathy for you. Mm. I can't celebrate you. I can't celebrate the wins because I'm in my own pain.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of noodling around as I was driving around this week, really trying to make sense of that yeah. in order to just bring it to the light mm-hmm. so that we can be kinder, more understanding, more curious, more supportive with people as they're making their own decisions about what to do with sexual betrayal and yeah. their relationship.
I think that that's so critically important because, Sherry, what I've experienced is in that process as well, whether the shame that we adopt for ourselves or the shame we put on other people, is that there's this discomfort in saying, I don't know. It's a control factor. And that makes a lot of sense that I'm grieving inside and I don't know what to do with that. So I want to control it. And shame becomes this mechanizing device to control rather than to simply, I think what you're encouraging us to do is to connect with those who are hurting.
Yeah. And feel your pain.
Yes.
As much as we don't want to, we can't heal what we don't feel. And instead of putting it on others, right? Really stop and think, what am I sad? What have I lost?
Yes.
What do I wish would have happened?
Absolutely.
Upcoming events. We have a Club New Life Zoom November 1st, which is a Saturday morning, 8 a.m. Pacific time, 11 a.m. Eastern time. And Mark Cameron's going to present a talk, Forgiveness and Repair. Make sure you register because we want to see you there. We also have the Life Recovery Conference. That's October 4th. It's all online. The theme is Choosing Wisdom, based on the Proverbs that encourage us to seek wisdom. And we're going to give it to you all day long, actually about 5 hours. We got 12 different speakers who are going to present multiple topics on choosing wisdom and recovery. We have our Intimacy and Marriage in Dallas in October 17th through 19th. Every Man's Battle is November 7th through 9th in Dallas, and Restore is November 7th through 9th in Washington, D.C. Always check newlife.com. Our updated site is very easy to navigate, and you can read about the courses and any webinars that we have coming up. There's so many things that we want to provide for you to have your new life, so check it often. Have you ever thought about the mask that you or someone else you might know may be wearing? Let's have compassion and maybe share new life with someone or make a choice to do some coaching or counseling. Maybe attend one of the webinars or classes. Listen to the radio. We have many ways for you to recognize the mask and to be able to take it off. You can call us too, and we'll help you. Removing your mask requires trust, safety, and connection. First, you recognize the mask, and then you can ask someone to help you recognize that. You can say, have you recognized me wearing a mask? Do you see the real me? Let's do what we can to live the best life that God has intended for us to live. Well, last but not least, I want to refer back to Romans 13:14, where it says, put on the Lord Jesus Christ. So if you're going to wear a mask, although I don't think Jesus Christ is a mask, I think looking and sounding and having Christ as what people see in you is the best mask if you're going to wear one. We'll see you next time.